All right. Hey, good people. It's your girl, Fredrika Easley. And we are back with another episode of We Are Blunt. The people are blunt. And yeah. I am here with two beautiful ladies. One, you know who she is, my beautiful co-host, Melanie Davis. Say hey to the people.
What's up? What's up to the people? We're glad to be back.
Awesome. And then we have a guest, y'all. And this is the beautiful, talented Hope Wiseman. Hope, say hey to the people.
Hi, everybody. Thank you both for having me.
Absolutely. So this is Hope Wiseman of Maine and Mary. For those who don't Mary know, and me.
No, it's okay.
Look at me. Okay, but I had the M's. Okay, so
you have the M's.
Maine and Mary.
Mary and Maine.
Why do I keep wanting to say?
You caught my dyslexia.
Look, long day. I'm gonna start again because that's gonna bother me. Okay, here we go. Let me clap. All right. Hey, good people. It's your girl, Fredrika Easley, and we are back with another episode of The People Are Blunt. I am here with my co-host, Melanie Davis. Say hey to the people, girl.
Hello. So glad to be back.
And also, we have a guest, the beautiful Hope Wiseman. Say hey, Hope.
Hi, everybody, and thank you both for having me.
All right, Hope. So I don't really think that you need much of an introduction. I think those who are in the industry know who you are. We just saw you rip the stage up at MJ BizCon. But please do us the honor of just giving like a quick 60 seconds of who you are and why people should know you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hi, everybody. My name is Hope Wiseman. I'm the founder of Mary and Maine, which is a retail dispensary brand. Right now we're operating in Maryland, looking to apply in some new markets that are upcoming on the East Coast. So that's exciting. I'm also the founder of Wiseco, which is Mary and Maine's parent company. We own some IPs and, you know, we'll be looking to kind of get those into new markets. So yeah, I'm you know, really trying to make a way in this industry for people who look like me. A lot of people know me as the youngest Black woman to own a dispensary. So yeah, you know, I'm happy to be in the space and be an early adapter to the legal side of the industry and helping to get other people involved too.
So thank you so much for being here. We got an opportunity to see you, like I said, at MJ BizCon. And one of the things that you said that stuck out to me was, I won't say a distaste, but you're kind of done with having that label of the youngest, you know, the youngest woman. And please let the people know, like, what does that mean to you? You know, the fact that we're 2021 and when you opened up was in 2017, you were the youngest. But
yeah,
how do you feel about that?
Yeah, definitely. I didn't go into this industry with that in mind, you know, so when the first article was written about me and that was the headline, I was like, oh, I guess I am the youngest Black woman in the space. I'm like, okay, you know, but it was a title that I wasn't prepared to hold because I didn't know the weight of what that would mean to so many people. I'm very proud though to hold it, but at the same time, you know, I feel like my part of my purpose is not fulfilled until somebody else is taking that title from me. I feel like that would feel very, very full circle for me when it comes to that, from not really expecting to have it and not really, you know, going into it for that or for those accolades. Like, I really didn't want to be recognized at all, to be honest. I just wanted to like put my head down and work. Same time, I realized how many people I've inspired in this industry. And I also realized that I'm creating a blueprint for others to follow. So I have now, you know, kind of accepted that responsibility of having a platform and using it for, you know, for good, I guess you could say. I sound like a superhero, but.
You are the boss.
Yeah.
let's acknowledge the fact, though, like, first of all, you know, Black women, Latinx women, women of color, we are superheroes. Because anytime we do good, we are always raising the tide. We are always pulling people along with us.
Yes. Every time. We have to. I mean, if not, there's not going to be a way for us to succeed. We're already systemically placed in a deficit. You know, there's always going to be things working against us that have been hundreds of years in the making. So in order to begin to level the playing field, I don't even know if it's possible, you know, within a lifetime to do so. Yeah. But in order to begin to level this playing field, you know, we have to help each other.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tall order. It's a tall order because we're talking about, you know, generational wealth, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about decades, like this country being built on people who look like us, all three of us, our backs. And so how do you level something like that, right?
Right.
Go ahead, Melanie.
And I was just going to say, I mean, Hope came in armed with the tools necessary. I mean, because you know me, I'm always like, follow that paper because it's going to tell you the truth. And Hope, I mean, you come from a banking background, a finance background. So you are ready for the boys club. Did we freeze? Hello?
Yeah, I froze, I think.
Oh, no. Okay.
But yeah, you said I came in with the tools.
And a banking background.
Your banking, your finance background. I mean, you were ready to crack the boys club.
Yeah. And that's really, I mean, most big business is like that. And there's no exception in the cannabis industry. Definitely a big boys club. Luckily, I was kind of used to it, like you said, from the banking background. It didn't really bother me. And I was you know, just aware a lot of things that women have to go through in business. And especially when you get to in a new emerging space, you're going to have so many different types of people trying to get in, and they're like levels to the types of businesses that you interact with and that you deal with. And I'm kind of like teetering in that, like, you know, mom and pop and then like corporate level. So I kind of interact with a lot of different types of entrepreneurs. And it's like code switching almost to figure out how to get what you need out of everyone and to give what you can to people too for in these different kind of buckets.
So that's a really interesting point, right? Because so Crunchbase just released a report that was talking about venture capital, right? And that there's only about 4% of what has been raised by black entrepreneurs, by black, like Latinx and specifically women entrepreneurs, that we only make up 4% out of like this huge amount of capital that's going around. When you see the number, I think it was like 2.6 billion. When you see that, like that seems like a lot, but in the grand scheme of things, right? It's crumbs. And so when you speak about this code switching, if there was someone, another young lady coming into this space and they're trying to wrap their minds around, how do you secure, like, how do you get the capital that you're going to need? How do you spend somebody else's money and not, you know what I mean? And not be in a position where you robbing Peter to pay Paul and trying to put pennies together. Like, what would your advice be? Or what have you figured out in terms of that code switching and how you figure out, you know, what to say to who?
Yeah. Well, definitely know your audience and know where you are in your business. I think I said this on the panel at MJ BizCon, but you have to build your value, you know? So even before you're operating, there are things you can do to build your value. Christine from the People's Collective, she talked a lot about, you know, your data room and kind of how that is a valuable asset in itself. And, you know, how to make yourself more attractive to certain types of investors. So I think one of the most important things for an early stage entrepreneur is to understand kind of the types of investors there are and then what type of money you need to take. There's venture capital money, but honestly, I had a venture capitalist tell me this. He said to me, look, VC money wants really crazy growth, right? You know, they want to see over double, you know, they want to see double digits, but like not 10% growth, you know? So they, if that's what you're going for, if you're going for VC money, you have to understand that you have to have a plan that can prove that you can do that, experience on your team that says that. And you also have to understand that you're going to have to kind of kick yourself into overdrive. You're going to have to become one of these. Think about all the unicorn companies that you hear about that get these 1,000%, you know, growth and stories and all that. These entrepreneurs are really intense, you know? So I had a VC tell me like, look, you probably can create that company, but like, is that what you want? You know, is that what you want to do? But there's other types of money out there, people that expect different types of returns, family offices, angel investors, earlier stage, you can do friends or family rounds, and you can do some rounds without accredited investors. Crowdfunding is coming into play. There's a lot of different ways you can raise money.
Yeah.
You can raise debt. You can raise debt. You can, you know, you can just do different things so that you're not subject to, you know, hitting very ambiguous or ambitious is probably the much better word, ambitious targets every year, depending on your business model. Like a tech company can do it, but a dispensary with very fixed margins is like, you're likely not going to grow 3,000% in 2 years.
I mean, I think it's important for you to say stuff like that, for people to hear things like that, because oftentimes people think of dispensaries and they, you know, it's sexy. It's like, yeah, I want to get a dispensary. Like, you know, that's usually kind of like the go-to, but not really taking into consideration all that it entails. So like, you know, you've been in the industry for what, like 4 years now?
Yeah, about. Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's be honest here in terms of how consuming has it been for your life, because people need to know what they're getting into.
Yeah.
So like, what would you say?
Early stage, you know, I worked in the store physically, so we bootstrapped most of everything from finding our own property to pretty much being our own general contractors to like.
You was knocking down walls. You was knocking down walls.
I didn't knock down the walls. I went and played with it the first day, but no. But my mom and I were like going and pulling permits, and like, you know, our GC like left us in the middle of the project. Long story. It's just, you know, we endured a lot. So to your point, it was extremely time consuming from the application stage to post application after we were awarded the license to getting operational. And these are like years, you know, so like we applied in 2015. I spent pretty much like 8 months of 2015 focused on the application. Granted, now with my level of expertise now and like my resources and stuff, it wouldn't take me nearly that long or that much focus. But with nothing back then, it took a while. A lot of trial and error. Yeah. You know, a lot of trial and error, a lot of like having to figure things out and going to talk to people and then changing this and changing that. But about 8 months pre-application, then it was a waiting period of a year almost. And then we got awarded the license, and then about a year of real estate and figuring things out, hiring, all of that. And then, you know, we've been operating for a little over 3 years now, operational selling to the public. So, and I physically worked in the store for about like 8 to 12 months. Mm-hmm. Myself. So I could have been checking you out. Like, you know, I could have been checking you in, and the, you know, it could have been me. And my mother did, my general manager. Yeah, this is a family thing. My mom. Yeah. My brother works for us. Our co-founder with my mother is a longtime family friend. He practiced right next door. They're both dentists. They practice right next door to each other since I was born. So yeah, like we all know each other very well, and we really all pitched in. So it was very time consuming at first. I did build up the business enough so that I didn't have to work in it day to day physically, but I began working on the business. So that's when I began building out WiseCo and kind of our other ventures. I started consulting a little bit on the side and all of that good stuff. But Yeah, I mean, this is like my full-time life, my full-time job. I focus almost exclusively on trying to grow the business, whether that is like our current operations and future ones. But yeah, my days start pretty early and end pretty late every day. So it's a real-time commitment. There are ways you can do it. You can hire other people to operate, and you know, people would gladly take that off your hands for a fee.
But what does that mean, right?
For a fee.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, like you have to be realistic about it. You can hire people to do things, but what does that mean? You know, right. And so you have to be realistic with yourself. And then also, I think to your point about doing everything and knowing how to do everything, it just makes you, it makes the building of the business easier for you because you have firsthand knowledge and experience. So you can train someone else to be a cashier, or you know what it takes to give good customer service because you yourself had to give it.
Yes, I totally agree. And I think, you know, I think one of the fundamental issues with a lot of cannabis companies right now, bigger MSOs, is they just grew so fast.
Yeah.
You know, they got so much money. And they had all these licenses, they grew super fast, and there's no real culture. There's no, you know, there's no real connection to the industry. And I think over time, you know, we're gonna see them fail. Granted, a lot of them are gonna win still, because just this is how, like, you know, economics go. I was an econ major in school, mm-hmm. and if you look at economics, early stage, new industry, a lot of early adapters that have the biggest market share are going to win, period. You know, they're going to get bought out and all that stuff. But somebody else is going to have to come in and implement the culture and all that stuff later, once brands mature and once brands are like a big part of the market. So, yeah, I'm definitely expecting to see. I mean, there's going to be a lot of M&A. We're seeing a lot.
Well, we're seeing that now.
It's picking up. Yeah, it's picking up.
And everybody, if you have a license right now, somebody will buy it from you right now. You know, but it's like you just have to kind of see where your company is, and like there's going to be that perfect exit point if that's what you're looking to do.
Yeah.
And you know, for my company, like now is not quite the time. We're approaching adult use in Maryland. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to create another line of business under our parent company, and that's the IP side and creating brands and creating partnerships and getting licenses to be able to produce those brands. So that's kind of where I'm shifting to. But you know, Mary and Maine will always be the heart of our brand and of our company and how we started.
And I think that that speaks to what you said earlier in terms of knowing your worth and also having a vision, because that's gonna dictate a lot of how you move. Like the reason why you got into the industry and what your intentions are is going to dictate how you move it and the type of deals you accept and how you develop.
Yes.
So that's cool.
So then how do you feel? I mean, because obviously you're very well prepared, having a finance background, particularly in econ, which tip of the hat to you. I mean, being able to follow numbers at that level is, you know, that's extremely valuable. And I appreciate any woman of color being in that space, because we need more, bottom line, because that's where the truth lies. Mm-hmm. The devil's in the details and the truth lies in the numbers. But you know, I mean, I know you were on the same panel as Christine De La Rosa, our founder. And she talked about social equity, and we need to stop calling it social equity because it's become the Hunger Games. It's pitted us against each other.
Yeah.
You know, you've been prepared in this space. How does that view compare to people who are transitioning potentially from the legacy market, who haven't had necessarily the formal education, you know, those similar opportunities and things like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
this is where I felt the responsibility come in right here, because I did have, you know, extra educational resources and even financial resources with my mother and Dr. Bryant being able to lift me up and put me on their shoulders, and we could bootstrap the process. So, you know, I always say that, yes, we did this on a shoestring budget, but realistically, a shoestring budget in cannabis is still like $1 million or more.
Right.
Right. You know, which is still not something that most people can pull out of their butt. Mm-hmm. So I understand I totally understand my privilege in this space. And I totally think that it is the responsibility of myself and other people who are like me that have these same privileges to create that space for other people. I agree that calling it social equity at this point has created this kind of like, okay, you guys compete for this little small piece of the market, mm-hmm. and I'm gonna get you guys occupied right there. But over here, we're still gonna be winning. And in fact, we can be your saviors to come down and save you while we're still building ourselves up. You know, mm-hmm. it's a double-edged sword for me because I look at it like, look, I can use you to get where I need to be. But then at the same time, it's like, damn, I'm really just perpetuating the same system by continuing to build you. So it's like I said earlier in our conversation, this isn't an issue that can be rectified. I even think in like one generation or anything of the sort, but I think we have to be on the path. And I think one, talking about all this stuff is really great because a lot of people mm-hmm. are not even aware. And then two, I think, you know, stuff like what you guys are doing with the People's Collective, like that's awesome. And being able to like bring money from minority communities and give it back to minority businesses and offer everything that you do is that's what it's going to take to change the narrative.
Definitely. Definitely. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And thank you for doing the work. You know what I mean? Because wherever our life experiences have brought us, I believe in that, in all of our collectives, that we yeah. need to share that knowledge. And I yeah. think that's why all of us as people have been great storytellers, because that's what has created our generational learning. And that's where the huge disconnect is in this industry and in all industries. Because truth be told, this could have been done with sugar. This could have been done with flour. This could have been done with wheat. This could have been done with peanuts, you know, all the way along. But finally, it's coming down to cannabis and we're saying enough.
Yes.
You know, this is going to be done correctly. Mama has spoken.
Mother Earth is like, nah, not this time, y'all. Not this time.
Y'all didn't fucked up corn.
Right.
Not my ease. So question for you, because you've spoken a lot about your intent and your vision. But what brought you to this space? Like having a econ and a finance background, what said, like, why are you intrinsically motivated to deal
yeah.
In this cannabis industry?
So I was always a consumer. Well, not always, probably from a too young of an age.
It's okay. Around... We judgment. Ain't no judgment.
This is the People Are Blunt. So we're honest in this space.
Yeah. You know, so I was young when I first started using cannabis, and I just thought it was interesting how I knew a lot of other guys that used cannabis that liked it. But girls didn't when I was younger. Like a lot of my friends didn't really like it. They're like, oh, it makes me feel paranoid, or I don't really like this. But for me, it actually, you know, I felt good and productive and calm. You know, a lot of things that I think go towards me just being like hyperactive and thinking a lot, my brain like always going like this. So it just helped me calm down.
Yeah.
You know, and I really liked it. And I was a high performing individual on cannabis and had always used it. So, you know, although I was pursuing a career in finance, I had graduated with a degree in economics and was pursuing a career in finance. I looked at this industry like, this is an emerging industry, brand new. I have a unique opportunity to get in at the ground floor level. That's not going to be around that long. You know, I'm going to get priced out. I got to go for it now. Cause you know, honestly, part of me like always thinks, man, if I had just stayed in finance a few more years and learned a little bit more and got a little bit smarter, you know, I would be that much better. But I knew that there was a small window there. My home state of Maryland was issuing licenses within the next year. So this is 2014 that I first got into it. They were issuing or doing an application process the next year because your legislation lays out how the process will go for you. So you should read it if you're in a state where you're kind of confused on what's happening. or at least proposed legislation. It'll give you a picture of what to expect. And I knew that Maryland was coming. So I approached my mother and I said, hey, mom, you know, you preached to me my whole life about how to create legacy. And, you know, we got to start the path to creating generational wealth. And, you know, I've always felt called towards entrepreneurship. Didn't think it would happen this fast. But, you know, here we are. And I think this is a good opportunity. And she thought it was, too. My mom was not a cannabis consumer, knew nothing about it really before, but was open. And as a medical professional, did her research. And I think we both just like fell in love with the industry from every aspect. The fact of the medicinal properties and you know, the power of the plant and all the different things that it could do. And just the anticipation of all the research that is to be done. Like, we really don't know all the different ways this plant can help us. And, you know, we're going to figure out different ways to regulate it and to make it a little bit more effective exactly for what you want, you know, and that was exciting to us. And then also the economic opportunity that I spoke about and the idea of getting in at the ground floor level of an emerging industry. And then lastly, you know, I think everyone understood the term war on drugs and everybody kind of knew what that meant. But when you really start to look into it and you realize how systemic it is, it's really embedded in the history of our country. And it was about, you know, wasn't about drugs at all, wasn't about cannabis at all. It was more about incarcerating people and also keeping certain industries afloat, you know, and they knew that this industry could disrupt a lot of things. And then they saw another opportunity to lock up certain demographics of people and create our prison system that we have, which is crazy, you know, right. So once all of those things combined together, we just were like, this industry is one, like, it's just calling for people that are just like us to get into it. People with the means, but also the relation to the struggle that have come from it.
Because that's important. That's important. Yeah.
No one, that's not what these bigger companies are not. Most of them are not worried about that. And I get it. This industry is huge, but.
That to me is the problem, right? Because the heart cannot be lost from this. You know, Melanie always talks about like reclaiming our ancestral medicine. And that's what I think we lose a lot of times with some of these operators who are literally just in it for the economic opportunity. Not trying to discount that. Like, that's great. Like, yes, we want to build generational wealth. We want to be able to take care of ourselves, our family, things of that nature. But you add something to it when you really have an understanding and you have a connection to the struggle. And like, the reality is that lives have been lost and lives are still being impacted, right? Like, we saw earlier during the pandemic, 4,000 people were released for nonviolent cannabis offenses. Mm-hmm. And now our government is, you know, trying to pull them back in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so when you see things like that, it's like, this can't just be about money.
Yeah. No more. We're an evolved society. We're an evolved society. And you especially, you know, I'm guessing that I'm a bit older, but I mean,
we say seasoned.
I'm a bit seasoned. I'm on the spicy side, people. Got that salsa and stuff going on. But for real, I mean, you've already pivoted. You've already spoken as a true economist. You've already done what a true economist would have done. They're just late to the game,
right?
They're just late, you know. So, so you all are doing it. I appreciate. I love how eloquently, you know, you just nailed, you know, exactly how the story. Not only your story, but as a numbers person, how it is we respond in these market conditions, you know. So, right the fuck on.
Thank you. Yeah.
So with all of the plans that you have for expansion and for, you know, continuing to develop and to deepen your foothold with your legacy building, what are you most excited about?
Mm, So I'm excited to continue to watch the industry mature. I'm excited for new states coming on board and opportunities for us to continue to shape legislation, because I feel like, you know, well, I know what we're doing in these states, this work that we're doing in states will shape the federal legislation once it is finally developed. Yeah. So I'm having a good time right now. You know, I'm pretty much like pinged by almost every like state government as they're coming up to give my comment. And I work with a lot of organizations that work to push specific initiatives that I believe in. So yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm excited about, I think as the industry matures, brands will become more prevalent. So I you know, I think that's really cool. And that's definitely why I'm shifting towards the brand side of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of anticipating. One of the most interesting things about this industry is just how sophisticated it is, how every single market like operates as its own country. It's almost impossible. It's not impossible to scale, but extremely expensive and difficult. So I'm just interested to kind of see how I can create businesses that can scale without the red tape, that can still somehow touch the plant. There are ways to do it.
I about to say, we just saw one recently with her name is escaping me, but Wana Brands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew you were gonna say that. Yeah. I mean, that's so interesting to me.
We just saw an example of like, she, you know, she definitely didn't go the licensing route. She has these agreements, these manufacturing, you know, these agreements or whatever have you, and, you know, was able to do what she was able to do, and recently just landed that deal for what, 2.97. So, and that's with an M on it. That's with an M on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited. 200.
She opened this more than 200 millions. Yep. Yeah. There were three M's.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's possible. It's definitely, I mean, it's not easy. I'm not going to say like, oh yeah, create your brand and everyone's going to want to produce it for you. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a process to it, but I think that is, you know, think about like the old pals of the industry, Wana Brands. I mean, there's quite a few Dixie Elixirs. There's a bunch. And if you look at how bigger companies, what they do is they build the infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. And then they just buy brands that they can, you know, utilize throughout their infrastructure, or they go out and buy companies that help to push their initiatives and help to push whatever their supply chain is. So if you create yourself to be one of those, or you be you're the big guy, or you're okay just being a smaller company and that being it, that's cool. You know, whatever you're okay with, you can really create your business with your exit in mind. So I'm excited to play with the brand side.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. We look forward to the work that you do on the brand side. We look forward to supporting you. Cause I know, like, look, we got, and as people of color, like, we have to up and down the supply chain. We have to support each other. That's one of the ways that, you know, we build our market caps, is one of the ways that we, you know, increase our ability to leverage when it comes time for those deals. If that's something that you want, is making sure that we support each other.
Yep.
So
any of the states we're in, we will follow your SOP. You're the boss.
I am. Vice versa.
We'll talk offline about that good stuff.
Absolutely. I'm super excited about all the future possibilities of the people's ecosystem, working with you all, with Mary and May.
Thank you.
And all that good stuff. But look, thank you so much for taking time out of your evening. Because I know your days are long, sis. And so I really appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you again. I'm sure, I know you on the circuit. I know you are all over the place at everybody's conference. So I look forward to seeing you. And until next time, the people are blessed.
Oh, well, thank you both. Thank you.